Welcome back to the Game Changer Unlocked. I'm your host, Brian Fetzer, and today I have two guests. The first one is someone who is taking on one of the most important and often overlooked challenges of our time, which is mental health awareness. Sean Lesser is the founder of The Real, an organization dedicated to breaking down stigma, building communities, and starting honest conversations about mental wellness, from local walks to a national outreach to a summit. He's creating an environment where people can connect, be heard, and know that they're not alone. This conversation, you know, really can change the way you think about mental health. And I'm excited to get a chance to sit down with Sean. You know, let's start with your origin story. What Sure. personal experiences led to the creation of The Real?
Sure. So maybe I give 1 minute on my background and then a little bit on the story, yeah. Brian, if that's okay.
That'd be great.
So I'm from New York, but I live in Atlanta, been here for about 30 years. But my background, kind of my resume, I did 30 years. I was involved in finance, both on the public equity and private equity side. So that's the super short version of my background. But the story was, it was September 22. I was depressed, had trouble eating, had trouble sleeping. I lost 40 pounds, which is amazing, Brian, because people be like, man, you look so good. What are you doing, right? And I wasn't like, oh, dude, I have this great diet. It's called depression. Do you want to try it? No. So, then the depression was growing. And then it was December 19th. It was a Wednesday. I was on a Zoom call, had like a full mental breakdown, not functioning, can't really speak. And I was suicidal, telling my wife, I don't want to be here anymore. Please freaking kill me. So, you know, most wives don't want to hear that. There's some might, okay, let's just be honest, but not my wife, right? So I'll keep going, Brian, but if you have any questions before I keep on jabbering on.
No, I think that's great. I mean, it's a good perspective for somebody to understand, because a lot of our, you know, people that watch the show are entrepreneurs or business leaders.
Sure.
And, you know, to show that the conversation is real, that it's not just
100% it's real. And this, what we're talking about, you know, no one's immune from mental health, no human. And I like to say that, you know, I was at a 10 at one time, that's being a bad place, but every human is at a 2, 4, 6, or 8 at some time. That's your breathing, right? So when I was telling my wife that, then the next question is like, well, what do we do? And then it's super complicated too. We don't know. So live in Atlanta, like I said, so we went to the emergency ward. I was in the emergency ward and they rolled someone out, telemedicine, asked me all these questions. And then they say, do you want to get checked into the psych ward? And I'm like, I don't know what that means, but yeah, I want to go somewhere, which is, you know, kind of wacky. So went home, packed up my eye mask, my sound machine, my computer. Next day went to this facility and I really didn't understand it till I got there, because first, there was a lovely lady there that looked like my second grade teacher, you know, signed me in. And then the next room, there was a lovely police officer, very nice guy. Now looking through my bags and stuff, like, okay, this is real. And you can't have a sound machine, eye mask, or anything like that in that place. That's a place so you don't hurt yourself. So that got interesting real quick. So I was there for 2 days. Then I got out. I went home. I wanted to go back to work at the company that I co-founded. I had two other partners. Sometimes in business, things don't work out with partners. My partners ended up buying me out of the firm. Wonderful, I got some money, probably didn't have to work for a year. But my company was my whole identity, it was my whole life, it was my whole existence. So when that happened, I fell deeper into depression. And I think this, you being, you know, with the athletes, Brian, I think that happens a lot to athletes is, a baseball player was telling me, and I'm sure it's in every sport, he's like, the baseball player has two deaths. One when he retires, and the other when he actually passes, right? So I'm sure it's for every sport, because that's your whole right. identity, you know?
No, it's very true. So, I mean, let's fast forward. You mm-hmm. know, just recently, mm-hmm. you start The Real, which is fascinating on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. At the reason behind it mm-hmm. and the incredible growth that mm-hmm. has happened in a very, very short period of time.
So let me give you a little, okay.
I was going to say, tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, I'm gonna go a little bit back, and then I'm gonna go right into that. So, how was it created? So, yeah, I went to this psych ward, got out. Then I wanted to go back to work. Didn't go back to work. Then another. This goes to their foundation on, and it's using the power of conversation and community. Another guy came into the story, a friend of mine named Brent. My wife texted him that hey, Sean's in a bad place. He came back right away, asking all the right questions. Is he in a safe place? This is happening to a lot of people. Especially guys, he had gone through something similar himself. So he became, if you think of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got like a sponsor, a buddy. He became what I call my mental health sponsor. And that's what we also do in the foundation. Walking, talking, hanging out. And then I went to two treatment centers. They take away your phone, you're in therapy all day. And then I got back a little bit over 2 years ago. And then how the name came about was when I came back, I was talking to Brent, my friend, and I was like, dude, you know, that was serious. That was real. And he was like, yeah, that was real. I said, that's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it the real. And then he asked me, well, what is it? And of course, I said, I have no idea. But I know there's a lot of men, women, and families suffering. And I think we can help them. So there's more chapters in what we're doing, Brian, but that's a little bit of the origin story.
You know, I mean, mental health is a huge topic, but it hasn't really been part of the public conversation.
Sure.
What do you think the gap is or the need is that the real can fill?
Sure. I think especially the real is so a couple of our goals is one, there's a for-profit and nonprofit side, but for the foundation is to help 10 million and one men with their mental health by 2030. And but this is not like a guy's thing. So many women are super supportive, but guys meet shoulder to shoulder. Women meet face to face. There are just both have issues, right? But they just have different pressures for a guy. And most guys are loners and they don't want to talk about this stuff and they feel uncomfortable, which is normal. But everyone goes through shit, right? So this is not unusual human experience. And just give people a place to be like, dude, I could be myself. It's okay. You don't gotta tell me everything that happened, then it's fine. Just to know that, hey, if you need help with something, I can help you. No big deal. You don't have to be afraid to tell me. And if you don't, it doesn't matter. So I think there's a yearning for guys for a place like that, just to be like, okay, I can just be myself. It's okay.
I mean, talk to me about the walks, because I think that is, it's such a unique piece, and I find it to be incredibly helpful, for sure.
Sure. And also, Brian, thank you for being an ambassador. So we have these the real ambassadors. We have over 350 ambassadors in 30 countries, six continents, with all kinds of guys. It's pretty incredible. So what we do once a month, and we're going to do it on this Saturday coming up, is called the thing called the Real Walk. So there'll be around 350 walks going on across the planet. Yeah. Why are we walking? Well, obviously exercise is great, but there's a lot of isolation, there's a lot of loneliness, there's also a lot of division. So I go for a walk once a week and I go with one guy that I don't think I could find anyone thinking more polar opposite than me and than this guy Bob. Literally every subject we're kind of fighting, right? Like, Bob, you're crazy. What are you talking about? You know. But at the end I said, Bob, okay, brother, I'll see you next week. Give each other a hug. And so what if we don't agree? It doesn't matter. Who cares? So I like chocolate. He likes vanilla. Whatever, whatever, whatever. So, but the walks is also where these people all over the planet can be part of something. And the nice thing about the walks is I don't think there's like a lot of pressure. You want to walk by yourself, that's fine. Walk with others, walk with your dog, your cat. It doesn't matter. And then we have the ambassadors take a picture. They post it on LinkedIn because that's just our spot. And I think that creates a domino effect that other guys see it and be like, oh, Brian's involved in this. And this happened, which your brother got involved. So it just says, oh, okay. So Brian's okay with this. I can be okay with this because it's not a big deal, at least in my mind. We're building it up to be a big deal, but it's human condition.
So if someone listening today or watching today wanted to get involved and or support the real
Sure, sure,
and
sure.
support the initiatives, What would be a step that they could take in that process?
So a couple of things. They can go to the website. It's thereal.care. They can fill out a form if they want to get more involved. They can also find me on LinkedIn. We're super active on LinkedIn with different groups. Of course, yeah, it's under a foundation. So sure, if people want to donate, amazing. So those are a couple of different ways that people could get involved. Go ahead, Brian.
And no, I was going to say the website. We're putting it on the screen right now. What are kind of the goals? Just quickly, I know them,
yeah,
and
they're going to pop up. Yeah, I'll test you. Goals? No, I think so. And also, I should get to there's two sides to this, right? So there's the foundation side. So on the foundation side, a couple of goals. One is to help 10 million and one men with their mental health by 2030. And I was speaking to one of the ambassadors, and he's like, "You should put and one." And he's like, "Because you are that one, right? Whoever I'm talking to, you are that one." So I thought that was super helpful. Another goal is to, we have these 350 ambassadors like yourself. The other goal is to get to 1,001 ambassadors by the end of 26. And I'm pretty confident we'll do that. And then another thing is we have ambassadors and we have people in all different places. So naturally now we have embassies instead of chapters. So I'm not sure what the goal is. I saw that, I think China or the US has the most embassies, like 250. So I think we need 251. So those are some of the goals on the foundation. And then the other side of it is, I come out of impact investing, 30 years in finance, and impact investing is make money and do good. So the other side of it, and one of our other goals, is to try to help move $10 billion of new capital into mental health by 2030. That's on the other side. And I'm happy to go into that, but I'll shut up for a second, Brian.
No, what I was going to say is the last question I wanted to ask you about is the summit that you have in October.
Sure.
I think it's a powerful, powerful situation.
Sure. So this goes to the thought process. How does money move, right? My old life, I had put on a lot of investor convenings. So when I got into this new space, I was like, all right, we need to do a convening. So we did the first real summit, the intersection of finance and mental health. We did it in New York City, October 18th and 19th. We had about 300 folks, and Deutsche Bank hosted it. That was great. And then we did it again in Davos, Switzerland, during the World Economic Forum. That went good. So we did it again in London in June. So I did this at my old company. We put a lot of convenings in over the years. So that we're going to do the next one in New York City, October 28th and 29th. If you go to thereal.events, you can get some information. But the thought process that every year we'll be doing these series of events to help build out the ecosystem, right? And get these, you know, the capital in the room, the funds, the companies, philanthropists, whatever it is, that builds momentum in this space. Because on one side, yes, this is one of the biggest topics on the planet. And then the other side of it, from a business standpoint, that's a pretty huge opportunity.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much, Sean, for sharing your story in this quick segment, your insights with us today. You know, we've learned how personal experiences can spark initiatives that make a real difference. The importance of community and mental health, and how breaking down stigma, you know, can create opportunities for connection and support. For viewers and listeners, consider one step you can take today to support mental health in your community, whether it's joining a conversation, volunteering, or simply checking in on somebody you care about, and definitely going to The Real and learning more about what you could be doing with that organization. I'm Brian Fetzer, and this is the Game Changer Unlocked, highlighting the stories and actions that transform lives and communities. We'll be right back with our next guest after this commercial break. Welcome back to the Game Changer Unlocked. I'm your host, Brian Fetzer. And my next guest is someone who brings together elite mental training, military leadership, and high-performance sport like few others. Dr. Hector Morales Negron is the Director of Mental Performance and International Development for the Pittsburgh Pirates and the founder of Peak Mental Game, PMG. From arising through the U.S. Army to teaching at West Point, coaching judo and combatives, to shaping the mental game of professional baseball players, he's on a mission to help athletes master composure, confidence, concentration, motivation, and resilience. We're going to take this episode and dig deep into why mental health matters in sports more than ever, and how you can prepare for high-pressure situations, both on and off the field, and it can apply to business as well. Dr. Morales, Negron, pleasure to get a chance to sit down and talk to you again. Giving a little backstory. You know, you came to the U.S. as a non-English speaking private in the Army, and kind of rose to a lieutenant colonel, then a professor at West Point, and then moving into sports performance. Wow, that just, you know, kind of makes you take things back a little bit. But how did some of your early experiences, you know, shape your view on mental performance and mental toughness?
Hey, Brian, thank you for having me on. I'm extremely excited for the opportunity to connect with you here today. I have been in sports my entire life. When I was 14 years old, I made the decision that what I wanted to study was sport performance. I wanted to compete. I wanted to coach. I wanted to do those things. My mom wanted me to go into computers back in the 80s. I wish, you know, sometimes I say I should have gone there. But I stuck to that. I mean, my dad was a sports director in our town. So I got the chance to see the athletes' ups and downs on those weekends. I was a competitor myself. I went to the University of Puerto Rico as a wrestler and a judo athlete. So it's something that has been around. And when I was in the military, I was still engaged and involved in sports. In the old Army sports program and the Armed Forces judo team at West Point in the Department of Physical Education. But for the most part, I think what I learned back in the day during those experiences is associated with the motivation behind the reason you do something. So I would say that I went into basic training as a non-English speaking private, as you mentioned, and mostly to help my friend. He wanted to get some money for a scholarship, we went into the military. And in my family, you know, when I wanted to go to college, a lot of people were telling me, no, don't go. Go to work, help your family. And I went to the military, and during those days, the logo or the motto of the Army was be all you can be. And that was something that inspired me in terms of motivating me to reach to the next level of my potential. What is the next thing that I can do? I went back to college, became an officer, came back as an officer, spent 26 years in the military doing multiple things, travel, deployments. And throughout, what kept me going was grounding myself in motivation and finding ways to drive to be the next and to be the best version of myself for my family, for my wife, for my kids. Just try to find a way to just reach that potential. And I think that's the connection between all these different elements. You know, West Point was an opportunity for me to go teach and coach for the first time. And I love the environment. I love helping the cadets. I started working in the sports psych, and we'll probably cover that later, but and learning more about sports psychology. And then I started helping my judo athletes with it. And then I started working, helping baseball players. So it's all about finding ways to motivate them, get them connected. And that was the journey. So throughout all those elements and all those steps, it was mostly about finding what's going to drive me to get to the next step.
What's a defining moment in your career, whether it's military, academic, sport, that kind of forced you to refine or adapt your kind of mental performance methods?
I will say that one critical one was when I stopped competing. I participated in the 95 military World Games, and then in the 1999 I was selected for the team, and then after that I was transitioning from being an elite level competitor in judo to becoming a coach. In my mind, I thought that I had all the technical stuff that I needed to be a high level coach and impact my athletes. But now, when I walked into that dojo for the first time, to that training facility, and I saw 27 athletes in there, and I started to assess where they were in their journey as compared to what judo meant to me and the doors that judo opened for me, I realized that I needed to dive deeper into understanding how to motivate a team. I had all the elements. I know I came from a background of training with a Japanese instructor, so I knew exactly what needed to be done in the dojo. I competed at the highest level of the game, but then I realized that if I don't get them emotionally engaged, if I don't learn, then I am not going to be able to impact them to be a championship team. So I walked into the Army Center for Enhanced Performance at West Point. I started learning about sports psych. They had a coach course in there about understanding how to use mental performance and integrate it into your philosophy. And then I fell in love with it. I realized that this is the missing key. This is the missing component when it comes to teams reaching their potential. And I began to use that for the rest of my career, not only as a coach, but also as a leader in different elements of my military career.
Wow, I'm so excited to kind of take the next step and dig a little deeper into your current work. And we're gonna come back after this short break and talk about your role with the Pittsburgh Pirates and how Dr. Morales Negron, helps the athletes kind of integrate mental skills into daily routines. I can promise you are not gonna want to miss this next segment on the Game Changer Unlocked. Welcome back to the Game Changer Unlocked. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to the Game Changer Unlocked and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. You on the move? You can catch the podcast version right from your own website. We are back with Dr. Morales, and I'm excited to get a chance to talk a little bit more about the in-depth part of what you're doing with the Pirates. With your role, especially the international development side of things, what's the unique mental performance challenges you see with younger or international players?
Well, it's a great question, and I think from the perspective of developing a young athlete, normally international space, we grab athletes at the age of 16, 17, so they're still high school age, but there are some elements of development that are still needed for them to become the competitor that they will become eventually down the road. So one of the things that we realized early in my engagement back in 2013, 2014, I was one of the first certified Spanish-speaking mental performance coaches that came into the game. And I began to recognize some of the challenges I had myself growing up in terms of development. If you want to reach your optimal potential, you got to have basic foundational performance or basic foundational elements of your development. So that if there's some things that are missing in your development, then they're going to interfere with your peak performance. And that could be anything from, the willingness and understanding how to follow directions, to have the discipline to be able to do the sleep correctly or do the meal selection correctly. So all those elements are things that we need to impact and identify on our athletes. So before we start diving into performance related concentration, focus, or composure, we need to recognize, are you doing everything that needs to be done in order to set yourself up for success in your next competition as part of your habits? So, and that's one of the elements. And one of the biggest challenges is that. So we need to identify where in their development is each of these individual athletes is in order for us to be able to effectively impact their performance.
Have you found a difference between some of the international athletes compared to individuals that, are from the United States directly?
Yeah, early in the journey, and this is what's not only, directed to the Pirates. This is in general, as an industry in general. One of the biggest challenges that we have had is the transitioning into what we call showcase environment. So they're doing it here in the U.S. as well. A lot of showcasing leads to you demonstrating your skills, but then it takes away the opportunity for us to recognize how those skills come to life in an actual competitive setting. And I think in the international market, I think it's been like that as well for a long time. They have gone to look at the raw tools of the player, and all decisions are made based on that raw tool. And then all the other circumstances are like, how can this be brought into the game? Can we actually see them play under pressure? So we know exactly what areas do we need to strengthen becomes critical. I think in the U.S., a little bit more advanced, most of the guys are playing travel baseball. They are in competitive settings. They are going to, you know, schools of competition since they're at 5 years old. And I think that happens in some countries in the international market. But in others, once a player gets recognized as someone that has the talent or a particular tool, that gets removed from that environment and they go into a showcase circuit. And so to me, that creates a lot of challenges when it comes to fulfilling your potential and reaching your talent.
Well, I mean, I think coaches, and I would be honest, I'd say I was notorious for saying it myself as a coach, you know, hey, it's all mental, you know, or you gotta work on your mental game. But it was hard to kind of put that into practice, into practices. Or how did I could kind of bring it into practice. What are some ways that you've kind of integrated the mental part into a practice with an athlete?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges that we have, whether it's the international market or here, is when we see the mental game as something that is separate or something that is to be fixed, something that it needs to be corrected, because then the athlete begins to defend against that and don't open up about what challenges they're facing, what's in their mind, what are some of the things that they would like to sharpen and get better at. So from my perspective, and in my peak mental game approach, as well in any other practice that I had, whether it was me coaching my national championship judo team or just soldiers in the military and combatives, it was always the same. Like, we all have emotions. We all have nerves. We have thoughts. We can't make those separate from who we are. You can't park them and go compete. They come with you to the events. So let's make them part of the conversation. To me, if they could be part of the conversation on the back end as a reason why we didn't reach our performance potential for that game, they should be part of the conversation before the game. So we can't say, you know, hey, we're just going to prepare you. We're going to give you the drills. We're going to get you ready. We're going to throw you out there to compete. And then at the end of the game, we're going to talk about, well, you couldn't focus. You couldn't manage your emotions. And that's why we lost. Well, coach, we didn't practice that. So you never practice managing my emotions. So it's just, they leave it up to the athlete to figure it out instead of saying, this is something that is collective. It is part of the game. And if it's going to be part of my speech as a coach at the end, then it better be part of my training plan, because I can't have it both ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And when you talk about supporting athletes, supporting individuals with their kind of mental performance part, I'm sure you see it how parents and, you know, support systems, teammates kind of all play into that role in either reinforcing or undermining someone's mental health and performance. How does that get addressed?
You know, in different settings, again, it's done in different ways. So I have done it in the past with travel teams. During my initial stages, I was lucky to be with a team that was sponsored, and every athlete that was a member of the team didn't have to pay any money. But one of the requirements were that the parents will sit through my presentation on the impact of parent behavior on the stands, on the child's anxiety, performance, and things like that. So I will cover some of those aspects to the parents. I've done similar things for the parents in the Pirates, just telling them, hey, you know, you're now the parent of a professional player. You're no longer a fan on the stands. You cannot rely only on the statistics that are shown the next day in the news. You got to ask your player, what are you working on? Because success looks different when you're a professional athlete and when you're working on something specifically on the field. So understanding and having that common language, our teachers also work on that significantly, finding ways to have connection with the parents. But I think at the end of the day, whatever the social support system is, we encourage any athlete, whether it's a high school student athlete through the PNG program or any other level, to have open conversations to the people that are in their circle and say, this is how you can support me best when it comes to keeping me engaged, keeping me motivated. Here are the questions you can ask. This is the way that I'm defining success right now. And the more clarity in that conversation, the better the support system becomes.
That's awesome. We're going to take another quick break and we're going to come back and we'll zoom out to the bigger picture, the state of mental health in sports and what the future might hold for athletes and coaches alike on the Game Changer Unlocked right after this break. Welcome back to the Game Changer Unlocked. In this final segment with Dr. Hector Morales-Negron, we are stepping back, taking a step back and look at the mental state of sports today. You know, what's working, where gaps kind of remain, and kind of the future of athlete mental performance might look like, shifting, you know, really from the culture to leveraging new tools. You know, this conversation, we're going to really talk about shaping the next generation of sport. Hector, from your perspective, where is the sports world right now in terms of acknowledging mental health and kind of where can things be improved?
Yeah, I think we are much better than I would say a decade ago. I think this is a direct impact of athletes, elite level athletes that have come out in the open, talking about their own journey, their experiences with mental health, you know, related situations or concerns. But the one thing to remember that this performance and mental performance and mental health exists in a continuum. And at one end of it, you have the mental health concerns that are required, clinical services and things like that. And on the other side of it is mental performance application and mental performance tools and strategies and application to the actual game and to the way that you execute your craft when you're out on the field. So what I see happening is an integration of more mental performance coaches and coaches themselves trying to find ways to learn more about mental performance and have better conversations with their mental performance coaches. But a lot of organizations, I would say, in baseball and in other places that are still a heavy split. You have organizations that are looking at it from a clinical perspective, which is the same way that, you know, it was done in the past, which is a player has a challenge or a problem or a perceived lack of performance, and they is considered as something that is needs to be fixed. It's a clinical thing. You need to go see the psychologist, for example. And instead of looking at things from a holistic perspective, we all have a mind. We have everything starts with a thought, and we can influence people's behaviors and actions and thoughts through intentional mental performance training at all levels. So some teams are there where they're doing the training, they're doing the assessment. Other teams are just focusing on doing a little bit of education just to bring awareness, to be in front of the team. But for the most part, after that point, it becomes more of a clinical thing. As situations pop up, they're available to be able to talk to players and have those conversations. So I see right now that we're much better than what we used to be in normalizing the conversation. I think some things are better than others. And from my perspective and from what I read and hear, but I believe that we're going to continue to improve the way this conversation goes in years to come.
When you think about public awareness, the media, social media, athlete testimonies, all those kind of things, you kind of mentioned it a little bit ago, has shifted expectations for mental wellness in sports. You know, is there pressure? Is it helpful? You know, where do you kind of see those things as they talk more and more about it?
Yeah, I think at this point, what I see in some circles is a lack of knowledge into the area to really have a true understanding of how this works. Sadly, you know, some of the people that are doing this interviews probably never competed themselves. They never went through the journey of going through some of the emotions of competition and everything else. They're doing the reporting on it. They're asking the questions. Like I remember, very very. Like crucial one where they asked Michael Phelps, I believe. No, it was a tennis player they were asking, and they were asking him like the gift of mental strength that you have. And the athlete stopped him on the moment and said, I'm going to stop you right there. This is not a gift. I work extremely hard on mental performance. I am intentional on what I do on mental performance. Like, but it was, and then the comeback from the reporter was, do you really work that harder on your mental performance? Like, whoa, wait a second. You know, it's a lack of understanding that there are other aspects of the mindset and the preparation of the athlete that need to be taken in consideration, because again, many of them were not in that stage. You know, I remember also, you know, a short clip from Sheffrin, Mikaela Sheffrin, the question that was asked to her, how do you feel before the competition? It's just going through all this very detailed narrative of what her internal dialogue is. And the reporter said, do you really, all those thoughts go through your mind right before you compete? And it's just, so it's a second example of how sometimes the lack of awareness leads to a misunderstanding of what the mental battle is, but it's always present.
Well, I mean, we talked about this next question on the phone a little while ago. You know, how does culture and identity really shape an athlete's mental health? You know, their, you know, how they need support and how kind of it's adapted to it.
And aspects of the identity, how they grew up, the things that,
yeah, you know, their background.
That definitely has a lot to do with it. At the beginning of our journey, for example, working with international players, it was very, very difficult to make the conversation normal. And it's not only in the mental space. This was me speaking to the baseball industry as a whole. Some of the players were told specifically by their family members, by parents, don't go to the trainer if you're hurt, because they'll put you on the sidelines. You will never get to play. So like they were told these things on the way into, on the way into their professional journey. So imagine what they're saying about talking to a psychologist or talking to somebody that is trained on mental performance. And so it will be that block, because culturally that's something that they don't normally do. And I had athletes themselves that just like, I'm trying to figure it out on my own. And I respect that. I say, yes, let's figure it out. But remember, you have a limited amount of time to figure it out. Within a 3-year window, somebody else that similar level talent than you, it's going to surface, and that they might take the opportunity for you to compete. So something to keep in mind is that if there's science, if there is things that other athletes have done to successfully overcome some of the things that you're fighting right now, let's just have the conversation. So it's a matter of normalizing it again, trying to find a way to normalize the conversation for them, and make it not scary and not judgmental. One of the things that I try to make sure our coaches do, and the advisors that I have on that work with PNG, is never, ever tell an athlete, oh, here's Dr. Morales, I want you to talk to him. Mm. Like, because that minimizes our conversation the way that we have made it normal. Yeah. If we are dealing with something, you're dealing with something, I'm dealing with something, and the athlete's doing something, he's no different than us.
That makes complete and total sense. Yep. And another question that definitely is, or I shouldn't say a question, it's more along the advice side of things. Mm-hmm. An up-and-coming athlete, an up-and-coming coach, the young coach, you know, what do they need to do to build mental resilience before that pressure ramps up, before they get to that big league level or the college level or even a championship level?
Yeah, I will say if I had to give one recipe, it would be for them to learn to be in the moment. The biggest enemy that we have as humans is that our mind loves to time travel. It likes to go to the past, to reminisce, to think about what went well, to think about what went wrong. It likes to go to the future to come up with things, so realize or dream or whatever. But our body needs our mind right here, right now, to compete, to function. And develop a systematic approach that they recognize when their mind is not where they're supposed to be. So if you're coaching and you're in the middle of the game, that's what you need to be. You don't need to be on what's going to happen if I lose this game, what's going to happen if this athlete doesn't reach their potential, what's going to happen. So all those things detract from your capacity to give 100% to what you're doing right now in the moment. And to me, that's at times the biggest challenge that we face.
Man, some incredible, valuable advice you've given. The show has been amazing. We could probably talk for another couple hours on this, but if people want to follow your work and continue the conversation, where do they need to go to get that?
No, thank you, Brian. They can find me at peakmentalgame.com, peakmentalgame.com, and they'll go to that site and they'll be able to find information and emails where to reach out to me. Again, and be able to get a little bit more of a background on exactly what we do when it comes to PNG and the mental game. And I'm look forward to a conversation with anybody that wants to follow up and see, see what how their potential can get to their maximum capacity.
Yeah. Hector, thank you so much for sharing your journey, your wisdom, and your perspective on the future of mental performance. From your Army days to the work with the Pittsburgh Pirates and professional athletes, you've shown us that resilience, composure, and confidence aren't just tools for the elite. They're really skills that we can build on and apply in our own lives. For our viewers, I encourage you to reflect. What mental skill do you need to sharpen today? Is it focus, resilience, or maybe just the courage to seek support? Whatever it is, take action and start building that strength. This is the Game Changer Unlocked. I'm Brian Fetzer. Thank you for watching. And remember, the biggest victories always start in your mind.